When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But she was like, ask them what it feels like to make God. And I was like, I don't know if I can ask that question. But I asked our parochial vicar. He's been a priest for less than a year now. He was just ordained. And I had a nightmare. He got reassigned. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But I asked him. And he was like, it's so weird. Like, I when I performed, when I blessed Holy Water for the first time as a deacon, and when I consecrated the hosts for the first time as a priest, my first thought was, that's it? I was expecting like fire and flames and smoke and something supernatural, but he's like, this is just so normal. It's so natural. It's more natural than anything. Yeah. Like God's action in the world is more real than anything. You know what your problem is, Ethan? You're very smart. And oh, dude, it was so funny. Today at dinner.
Hold on. Leo, don't tell that story.
Sorry.
Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast with two really smart guys. It's your boy Ethan.
And I'm Patrick. And today
tell them what the show is. Tell them about the show. Oh, we assume that nobody has ever listened to this show ever before.
That's a good point. Welcome to The Crunch, a podcast where me and my friend Ethan have a conversation about a Catholic topic and make jokes. Mostly jokes. That the point of the podcast is jokes. It's like, you know when you're like eating chips and dip, but it's mostly about the dip? That's what this podcast is about.
It's all dip.
And we've been doing this for about 7.5 years. We think more people should have conversations like this, and we're glad you're here. Welcome. Yeah. But I was, you know how like our sons are two-ish, and they're like learning new words all the time. So Leo's new words that he learned are handsome and pretty. He learned those two words today. Very good.
Yeah.
My wife is very lovely. I do not deserve her. And she's like, Leo, daddy is very handsome. And he looks at me and goes, handsome. And then I go, what?
Good.
It did. And then I was like, no, I have to return the favor and tell him that mama's pretty. But yeah, so now whenever you ask my son, what am I? He'll say handsome. And you say, what are you? And he'll say handsome. And then if you ask him, how was your day? He'll go, rough.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Rough.
Man, women really be using their kids to fish for compliments now. They're just like, they're getting more advanced with their tactics.
I don't think Phoebe thinks that far ahead. I've played chess against her. I don't think she's that conniving. She doesn't have a guileful bone in her body.
No, I'm like strategically placing things about the house so that my wife sees them in an exact order that makes her think a certain sequence of events, like an Artemis Fowl when he uses wordplay to get that guy to go to Taipei 101 and to get her to say something nice about me.
Never read Artemis Fowl?
In the second book, he's dealing with a wealthy businessman. He himself is wealthy, although he's a business child. And he uses I thought this was crazy in this book, where he uses, like, he says the word tie, and then he says the word, like, I'll pay you. And then he says like 101. So he was doing social engineering to get this guy to pick this particular building because this thing could only happen at this one spot. And as a kid, I was just like,
that's like the movie Now You See Me, where they rob Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. Sometimes it's not about how much money you've got; it's about getting back up and going at it again.
An incredible Michael Caine impression.
I think if they did Artemis Fowl again, I know they did a movie for Disney Plus, but I think they should cast Jesse Eisenberg, fully adult, no CGI, as the 12-year-old Artemis Fowl. I think that would be a very funny movie. And then Michael Caine could be the butler.
Artemis Fowl was one of those book series that I just never got into as a kid, but all of my friends were reading.
I think you really missed out, because if you were anything like me, in Artemis Fowl, it's about fairies and about children. And the fairies have their own language, And at the bottom of the page, there was writings in the fairy language. And you could dissect mm-hmm. the alphabet based on like a couple pages in the book. So you had to like read the book and find the page where they found. There's basically a Rosetta Stone inside the book where it gives you enough of the alphabet that you can figure out what the. And so I spent like days like writing out, and it's just like lore. It's just like a lore dump about the fairies in their little like language. I was such a loser.
Dude, that's awesome.
I could have been slinging dope with the boys on the street. And I was translating
writing in some fairy language. Dude, could you imagine if some organized crime unit was like, we're going to use the fairy language from Artemis Fowl for all of our communications.
That'd be great. It'd just take one loser on the force like me to crack
like,
the code.
Wait, this is from Artemis Fowl.
No way, guys. Get over
He's like, wait, I can read this. I still know how to do it.
All the cops are too mean to him to take him seriously. They're like, you're always living in your fantasy world, Kowalski.
I bet.
You go back, get back to the, go clean up this horse poop, if we're in New York.
my time to shine would have been if the drug dealers were speaking ubby-dubby. I was fluent.
Say again?
Zoom, the television show, not the suit computer program, but ubby-dubby from the television program Zoom on PBS. I didn't have cable.
Zoom with the kids? Like Zoom, yeah, Zoom. No, that's the Mazda commercial. What's the come on and no. Zoom, come on and Zoom, come on and mm-hmm. Zoom,
no, no, no.
Zoom.
I don't think that was
Zoom.
The,
a different program.
Send it Boston, Mass. 02134. Send it to Zoom. Yeah, that one. The one where
we're talking about the same program.
Okay. So the television program Zoom, they had a secret language that they would teach you. And again, you could learn. It's basically Pig Latin. It has a similar rule structure where you have to say the like a syllable within. But I had friends, and I was one of those friends who could speak ubby dubby. I have friends now that can still do it. I can't do it anymore.
Can you give it? Can you give us a couple verses, maybe?
Can you hum me a few bars of ubby dubby?
Yeah,
I could. I mean. What's the Ubby Dubby Festival? An electronic dance festival in Dallas, Fort Worth.
This sounds like a perfect event for you and I to go to, because you could talk to everybody there and I would go listen to the music.
So Ubby Dubby.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Ubby It wow. sounds like she's having a stroke.
What if we did a whole podcast in ubby dubby?
I think it's just before every vowel you say ub.
That breaks my brain. I don't even know how to do that. She does it so fast. She's clearly practiced. She's clearly been to ub dub.
But I knew kids and I know people today who can do it that fast.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think we should learn it, and then we do a secret podcast where we reveal some cryptic information about our bank accounts, and people have to learn to solve it. I figured that one out. I knew. Is that
one?
That
I don't
is?
Think that one was real. Okay. I mean, it's not. None of it's real, but
that just honestly, it also that just sounds like how Slime talks on the yard. To be honest with you,
that's fair. Yeah,
he don't need to dub in. It's just pretty funny. I miss you. We were together for many days.
I know.
And now we are apart. How was your flight home? Did you make it?
It was easy. I wore my jacket on the plane, my nice coat. Once more on the plane. I didn't want to pack it, you know?
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So I was on the phone with my wife because of tornadic activity here at the homestead.
Is that a
from
word?
From 9:30. Yes. From 9:30 to 10:30 on Saturday night, I was on the phone. I was on the horn with the missus. And then I come back down. I have another drink. But like from 10:30 to 11, I'm hanging out a little bit. But then I go back upstairs to bed at like 11. And you don't come back to the room until like 1:30, 2 in the morning.
1 o'clock.
It was after 1.
Okay, maybe it was 1:30.
It was 1:30. I got a question. What were you doing that whole time?
Hanging out, you know.
Yeah.
Just talking.
Who are you talking to?
Entertaining, you know. I was in Nick's suite hanging out with a bunch of folks and answering their dating questions. I was playing live
Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner without me.
I did.
You took over the practice, the family practice.
I did. Well, I'm a nurse practitioner, as we all know, and nurse practitioners can see patients. So
yeah,
I learned that today. But the I just answered a bunch of questions. But then it was like a really interesting and fun conversation. And after that, I was like, oh, this is the diminishing returns. Like I'm getting really tired and I need to go to sleep. You know, it was just kind of fun. Mike and Tom were like they were just zoned out watching baseball.
Really?
In a room just full of stuff. It was so funny. It was so funny. And I was like having a great conversation. But anyway.
Yeah.
No, I was talking. I was going up and down, back and forth from the room to the floor where the party was. Yeah. And I gotta use all these tickets. We had a bunch of drink tickets. I gotta use all of them. I can't drink too fast.
No, you know? No.
But I mentioned wearing the suit or in the sport coat on the plane. Because I did wear the sport coat on the plane. I got two more compliments on the flight home. Crazy.
Really?
And
the pilot?
From a TSA and a TSA guy and a flight attendant.
I have a question. What race was the TSA guy?
He was white.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like I only ever get compliments on my clothes from black people.
Really? Well, the flight attendant was black, but he was also gay. So I think that was more.
He was trying to hit on you?
Yeah, I think he was hitting on me. I think I look that good. No, I bring that up because I did sleep on the plane for an hour while wearing a sport coat because I was tired. That's no, the thing you left out was that I woke up for 7 o'clock mass with you.
You did.
Which was not part of the plan.
It was not part of the plan. I was talking to Patrick the night before. I was like, oh, I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to the Traveler's Mass at 7 a.m. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to sleep in. I'll go to the 10 or whatever. And I go down to mass. I get there a few minutes early, a respectable time. And I'm sitting there and mass has begun, and about 5 minutes into mass, we are through the opening prayers. We are deep into the first reading.
Patrick, is an acceptable time to come to mass late.
No, I think you were actually there probably during the confiteor. But Patrick rolls up and he just sits next to me very sheepishly. I was like, what are you doing down here, man? You just popped up out of nowhere.
We had this conversation like in our eyes. Like,
we did.
Yeah. He was like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm awake. You know, it's like at that point, it's like I knew that I woke up and it was 6:55 and I was like, I'm up. I'm awake.
And mass is in the hotel. You have no reason. If you're at a conference where there's mass, there's no reason. Like you don't have to drive. You just go down there, get in the ballroom, go, you know, you didn't even really have to be dressed. You could have come down in shorts. It would have been like, you know?
It's a Traveler's Mass. And I was like, this is going to be a shorter Mass, so it's going to be easier for me to pay attention the entire time. It's not going to have any music. I'm not going to have to pay attention to a long homily. There's not going to be 700 people going to communion, you know?
Right.
And I was like, so I can either be... And right when you wake up, you're like more alert than you are 3 hours later when you haven't taken a nap.
Because
and
of
so,
the glucose levels.
Sure. And if you say so.
don't question me. I'm a doctor.
I won't. Like I said, you're a very smart guy. We all believe
Thank
it.
You. Let's
we had a lot of good fun
later.
What? Circle back to you being smart?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, yeah. And yes, that was college Patrick coming out again. Like I'm staying out until everyone goes to bed. But the signal that it was time for me to go to bed was when a bunch of the girls stood up and they were like, "All right, guys, let's go to Cowboy whatever." And I was like, "It's 2 o'clock in the morning. That's not happening."
Yep, that is it for me.
I'm not leaving this location. I'll tell you that much.
No. I'm not suiting up to go out. Yes. Gosh, that sounds miserable. I remember when we used to live that way where we'd be like, just go out and do as much as we could. Wow, I was just so sad. Why did I do it?
2 o'clock was definitely a limit for me.
Yeah.
But it should have been midnight.
I got a text from one Katie Ruvey today that said, "You and Patrick have shared a hotel room more than any other two straight, non-related men in history."
She's right, though.
She is correct. Every other guy, every other man that's shared a hotel. It's just because I text her back. I said, it's just because we are young. And so it's acceptable to a lot of people to just room us together. And also we work in a niche that is not any of our partners or our sponsors, but notoriously cheap. And so we just kind of get hosed.
And also, we are notoriously cheap, and so when it's time for us to pay for our hotel room, we're also not, you know?
No. We are not cheap. We are poor. there's a difference. We can't afford to do two hotel rooms.
No, but especially not at the Omni.
If you're paying $6,000 for a guy to do one talk at your conference, you can afford to pay for two hotel rooms for the guys doing the podcast at your conference. I'm not saying this is YCP. This is other conferences and pay rates that I'm talking about. But pay the guy $5,000. Put me in a separate room. His family is fine. I need my own room.
Also, wait, the last time we shared a room, it was because you didn't have a room and you were going to sleep on the floor of someone else's room. That's what it was. And then Katie had two beds in her room. And so she and I switched that I could have the room with two beds and then have you in it. Yeah, that was fine. Yeah. But yes, we have shared hotel rooms often.
I was going to stay at John's house and I decided to not drive 35 minutes back.
That's right.
To where he lives. And I just stayed where we were. So,
but it's good because we have content to make.
Indeed.
We made very little content on this trip. I don't think we should have. I think we used our time wisely.
We did. We did the more important thing. Instead of creating content, we set up meetings, which will hopefully afford us the opportunity to make more content in the future.
Oh, Marcelino showed up after you left, by the way. I meant to tell you that. Yeah.
That night?
No. Like the next morning.
Oh, like on Sunday. Oh, okay.
Like right after you left. I did. We had a conversation.
Did you talk about? Do you talk about the big thing, the big cheese?
What big cheese? Have we told people about? Oh, the course?
No, he's working with.
Oh,
a big
yes.
You talked about that? You didn't.
We talked a little
about
that. We talked a little bit about that. We talked a little bit about like our content, and he said the same thing that Nick said, where it's like you can't really hire out your content production. Like you have to be the ones that are writing the content because it's you. You're the brains behind the operation, and I'm like, whatever. Speaking of content, I want to actually talk about something this week.
Oh, okay. I had a topic. I can save it. I can save it.
You had a topic?
I did, but that's okay.
This is
There was a woman who's the governor of South Dakota. She wrote a book about how she shot and killed one of her dogs. And I thought that would be relevant to talk about on the show.
Dude,
because I've advocated for the execution of dogs in the past. And I'm getting vindicated.
I saw this reel that was like that friend whose dog just won't die, and it's like cataracts and like just it's that's my family dog.
That's
Scout.
the Shane Gillis joke about seeing Joe Biden come out on stage at the debate. It's like a dog that's
America.
15.
Yeah,
it's like ooh. Sad. Yeah.
So a step back in time.
Yeah, I'm ready. Take me
America's
back.
Catholic Church sees an immense shift towards the old ways. We've been found out.
By whom?
By the Associated Press. The Associated Press has received the intelligence reports from the FBI embedded in the trad parishes. And in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they're mad because the youths are trad. They're mad at the trads. Have you read this article? Do you know of what I speak?
I've seen excerpts from the article online enough to the point where I get the gist of it. And I've seen I saw them call Focus a traditional organization, which is funny.
Amazing. It's really interesting. Yeah. It's really interesting to see a non-Catholic's analysis of us. Mm-hmm. It's like being at the zoo. Mm-hmm. If I was the gorilla watching you watch the gorillas. You know, I feel like what I'm saying is I'm a monkey, ooh, as my son would say. Ooh, ah.
Yes.
He just says just one each. He doesn't.
He doesn't go. Ooh, ah.
But the story sweet. Is based on Maria Goretti Parish in Madison, Wisconsin, which I think is actually a parish that Decided Excellence has a relationship with because they have a Maria Goretti magazine. Yeah. That we use as our sample. But. Apparently, the story is about the that's
hold
you.
On. Hold on. Here comes me. There I am.
That's you. I'm the little monkey.
I'm the big one.
I'm the big monkey.
Okay, carry on.
So the story is centered around this parish in Madison, Wisconsin, and the fight that's going on between the old parishioners and Father Young Trad, who's come in and said, you know, we're changing things. Mm-hmm. And these older folks are upset because they, you know, thought that Latin was gone, and they're upset that things are, you know, going away at this parish specifically. So they're saying, like, we've spent...
When you try to explain the Lord of the Rings to someone who's never heard about the Lord of the Rings before.
What I'm doing right now?
Oh, just like talking about the different factions and the age-old battle between the old boomers and the young trads. And there's a lost language, and it's inscribed
but
in
a
book.
I find this so interesting.
It is. Oh, totally. Lord of the Rings is a great book.
It's interesting that there's these old folks who are so upset that mm-hmm. things are changing mm-hmm. when the reason why things are the way that they are is because they were once young and changing things.
And changing things, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I just don't know if they can see that.
Everyone believes in the end of history if you were in your 20s or 30s in the 60s. Like, they believe that the millennium was just like the point of, like, everything was leading up to that, and then it was over, you know, subconsciously. It's like, that's why The Matrix is set in 1999, is because it's the peak of humanity, and everything went downhill after that, and they were kind of right. So,
but it's just incredible that, like, also these folks are leaving the church. Like, these old folks are leaving Catholicism. Like
oh no. Well, that's bad.
Yeah. So, many parishioners saw this as a requiem. St. Maria Goretti, once steeped in the ethos of Vatican II, many parishioners saw the changes as a requiem. I don't want my daughter to be Catholic, said Christina Hammond, whose family left the parish when this new outlook spilled into the church's school and her daughter's classroom. Not if this is the Roman Catholic Church to come.
Hmm.
And then they're talking about these young people, and they're like, they attend confession regularly and adhere strictly to church teaching. Many yearn for masses that echo with medieval traditions, more Latin, more incense. It's just so funny.
Yeah.
It's funny for them to say these things as if they are horrifying, mm-hmm. and like destructive. And it's funny because I don't know which way this is going to go, because I can see this going one of two ways. Whenever, like, liberals paint conservatives as the villains of liberalism, there always needs to be a revolution, right? Yes. And so is this just kind of like the reverse of what happened earlier, where it's like, instead of the kids need to rebel against the mean adults, they're not letting us dance in the footloose town, like, we need to rebel against the mean grownups. And it's the flip, where it's like, these kids are trying to bring back the old order, and we got to stop them because they don't know what they're doing. Like, that seems to be where the ethos is going. I don't know if that's going to be what happens, or someone that I follow on Twitter made this interesting point where they're like, liberals are going to lose if they keep, progressive liberals are going to lose the culture war if they keep talking about just normal things as if they're radical conservatism, like having children or going to mass.
Interesting.
You know?
This does dovetail with my dog shooting thing, if you want me
to bring it. Yeah, good. Please talk about your dog shooting thing.
Okay, that's really interesting. Okay, keep that in mind. Keep that little nugget of liberals will lose if they talk about things that are normal as if they're evil. So the problem with the Christy Noem, I think is her name. It's like N-O-E-M. Yes. I don't know how to say your last name. But she's the
small town politician.
Governor of South Dakota. So
one
of the 50 most powerful politicians in the country. But she's a small town politician.
She's the governor of an entire state. I'm like, she's just, you know, a kid from South Dakota who, you know, got her break. No.
She was a vice presidential candidate at one point.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, we're all going to die and everyone's going to forget us. Holy cow.
Truly. So you really got to ask that girl out, because it doesn't matter. But this woman, the governor of South Dakota, she wrote a book. And you might ask yourself the question, why does the governor of South Dakota need to write a book? Perfect question. And in the book, she got clowned for what she wrote.
Yes.
Because she wrote about how she lives on the ranch, and there was this dog on the ranch that was biting people, and she was taking it out for the hunt, and it was disrupting the hunt, and she had to take it out to the gravel pit pop it right in the back of the skull with a 22 caliber rifle. And so when she did that, and she also talked about how she killed a couple goats, which I think is fine. I don't think anybody cares about the goats. But the dog, everyone was really mad about the, why'd you need to kill the dog? You could have given the dog to the Humane Society and they could have injected the dog and killed it, but in a cool liberal way. And so why did you have to use a gun to do it? So everyone's getting all mad at her. And I read this really interesting Substack. I love reading interesting Substacks. This one is from, it's called the Conundrum Cluster, I think. It's from Mystery Grove Publishing Company, if you're familiar with that outlet. He just deleted his Twitter account today, so I don't know how you'll access it. But if you go to theconundrumcluster.com, it's the it's an article here. I think everyone should read it. I really like it because it puts things in pretty clear-eyed perspective. But the problem is that Republicans and conservatives are right about things. Like, it is correct that you should shoot a dog if it's like biting your kids and like not, and like disrupting things and like attacking your farm animals. Like, that's, there's no,
because like, you live in South Dakota and like, you live in South Dakota on a ranch. Society is so far away.
Right. It's like, that's just the normal, the normal way of how things go. So like in, I wrote all this down to like, I could remember the logic of the argument, but despite being correct about things. So extrapolate that to other topics. So like, you shouldn't give children hormone blockers.
Yes.
And going to confession regularly is good.
Is good. Yeah.
You know, or having an open southern border with unlimited illegal immigration with no repercussion is bad. Like, these are things that you can probably point at and say the conservatives are right about these things. Mm-hmm. However, the prevailing sentiment about a lot of these things is that if you believe them, you are, have a deep moral failing. Like, you are completely and utterly wrong if you believe that we shouldn't have an open border, if you believe that we shouldn't give kids hormone blockers, if you believe that we shouldn't sin, you know, then you're wrong. So the problem is that the people who believe those things are the people with all the wealth and the success and the status. And I think Republicans, as this guy argues, and I agree with him, Republicans or people on the right are correct. And even people who are successful, like the governor of South Dakota, right? She still feels not accepted. She feels like she doesn't have everything that's owed to her because she doesn't get that same status. She's still called a bimbo by the left because she's a woman.
Crazy.
Right. Like, because she's a woman who believes in things that Trump also believes. She gets called other words that start with B. She is... people consider her to be lower class, even though she's literally the governor of a state. You know what I mean? Like, her political office indicates that she would be of a higher class.
Yeah.
And so his argument is that she wrote this book about herself, or had a ghostwriter write the book about herself, to start this, to start an argument that she could win so that she could prove that she's right. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, what she did is that she proved that she's not a good politician because she's spending time trying to create this persona around herself and like create this little lane where she can be right instead of just being a good politician. Mm-hmm. And this is like where the right fails and where the left is successful. And I think that's one of the problems, is that conservatives and traditionalists can't just exist. They have to like make their thing a thing, and then they have to win at that thing, which in doing so invalidates their success in the eyes of the people that dictate who has status and who doesn't have status. So in your example, with what you're talking about, the young folks are getting maligned and opposed by the old folks. Why? Because they've made their thing, we need to have incense at mass. Instead of making their thing, I'm going to exist at this parish and I'm going to be a really good member of the parish, which means getting to know the old people, talking to them, having conversations with them. And this is the last thing I'll say, and you can take it over, but he contrasts this with Donald Trump. He says Donald Trump is an example of a conservative politician who doesn't do this and was successful in 2016 because he was genuine. He was like authentic. He wasn't really like, he didn't have to put on cowboy boots and do a whole conservative thing. Like, you can't imagine Trump wearing jeans, you know, like a lot of presidential candidates would, because he doesn't need to do that. Right. Yeah. Like, he has a certain aesthetic sensibility and good taste that other people don't have in terms of the way he speaks and how he presents himself, right?
He definitely has an aesthetic.
He does have an aesthetic. I'm not saying that the gaudy Trump thing is good or not, but he has a cultivated intentionality about him that other people lack. And I think people like the governor here was trying to grasp at this like brashness, like they tried to grab onto that part of Trump, but it comes off as like this real inauthentic thing. And I think that's why conservatives are losing.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A quick word from our sponsor, author, novelist, Alec Mawley. His new book, Out of Sons, is out now. I knew Alec at Kansas State University. His younger sister is married to one of my best friends. Alec wrote this book himself, I think, while he was in dental school or something, which is kind of crazy. And I've started reading it. It's great. I'm really excited to get deeper into this. It's about two brothers traveling across the country together, wrestling with their faith.
We
got to
start the ad over.
Why?
I'm serious. I want to I want to start the ad with conflict.
Okay.
I want to start by saying, Ethan, I'm upset with you, and then you interrupt me and say, hold on, we got to thank our sponsor.
Great.
I'm serious. You did a great job, but thanks. I do think that we need to start with conflict.
Great.
Okay. Ethan, I'm upset with you.
What did I do?
You got a free book in the mail and then you read me the back of it and I wanted to read it, but I don't have it.
Oh, just another way that I'm smarter than you and have more books.
Thank you. We have a sponsor. We have an author sponsored our podcast. A friend of Ethan wrote a book.
His name is Alec Mawley and his book Out of Sons. You can find it on Amazon.com. Look up Out of Sons by Alec Mawley. And I did get it in the mail and you didn't. And I think that's just because intuitively people know that I read and you don't.
That is the reputation probably that I've developed for myself as someone who doesn't read. Ew, yucky.
Yeah. And you definitely don't read books about two brothers that are going across the country together and wrestling with their faith in God and growing in friendship all because of a woman. That's not the type of thing that you
read the back cover. And I am a sucker for these kinds of journey to a destination and a subversion of the expectation. Yeah, sort of. Yeah, like a big transformative experience. You read that to me and I was like, I love it. Also, I love stories about love, not working out. And guys, it's good.
This is a story written by a young man trying to deal with the modern world for young men. Like he's told me this is the book that he wished he would have had when he was in college, getting ready to marry his wife and all of these things going into grad school. So read Out of Sons. It's aimed at the boys, but I think the ladies could also benefit a lot from this book. If you got a boy in your life, go to Amazon.com, look up Out of Sons by Alec Mawley, buy it. And there's no way to tell him that we sent you, but I think he will know because there's tons of orders coming in because you're all going to buy it. Patrick.
He'll know in his heart.
Yes. And maybe one day you'll learn how to read.
Thanks, Alec Mawley. That's M-A-L-L-Y.
M-A-L-Y.
M-A-L-Y.
A-L-E-C-M-A-L-Y.
Yes. Look up Alec Mawley on Amazon. Thank you, Alec, for sponsoring this episode of The Crunch.
Back to the episode. What do you think?
Sure. I think it's because what they're doing the thing that they're accepting the paradigm. And I think you're incorrect in one respect. in that it's like the liberals are the ones that have, like the liberals are the ones that have the money and the power.
Mm-hmm.
I stand by my my this is how I see the left and the right is that the left is controlled by fake wealth and the right is controlled by real wealth, right? So like, I mean, think of big companies that are liberal. Think of big companies that are conservative. The big companies that are conservative own real estate and they own oil and they own these things, right? And the companies that are liberal are big and they own code, you know?
Facebook. I don't know if you could call BlackRock a conservative institution.
Well, I mean, like they might do like the liberal facing things, like the things that are hip, because obviously the Overton window shifts, right? But it's like they're the ones that are pushing conservative policy, I guess.
I don't know if you're buying this up is all this might be a simplistic
this
a,
is an oversimplification.
Sure.
And they're pushing what the prevailing understanding of left and right would consider to be right wing policy.
I hear what you're saying culturally.
Or if you just think about your average town, it's like the people that are liberal are the ones that are, you know, that the people that are right wing are the ones that have like, you know, I built my business. You know what I mean? And anyway, and then the lower class, the left and the right have lower class and upper class as well. And the lower class in the left are people that live in urban areas, and the lower class on the right are the ones that live in rural areas, and they have a lot in common. Then there's the middle class, and the middle class is up for grabs. And the middle class is the swing vote, and they become left or right depending on what kind of rich they want to be.
Yes.
This is my theory. Is that if you want to be liberal rich, you're kind of left wing. If you want to be conservative rich, you get like super conservative, right? This is just my theory. But I do think that because we're a liberal nation and we have our liberalism, we're always going to have like the Overton window is always going to shift to the left. Mm-hmm. It's like never going to go to the right.
Well,
it tends to the left, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's only gotten lefter.
I feel like recently it's gone more to the, it's, I don't know. The Overton window.
I think it's like the stock market.
I think the Overton window is getting wider. I don't think it's moving. I think it's getting bigger, you know, like more further left-wing views are acceptable and more further right-wing views are acceptable than they were before, you know?
Okay.
It's two rectangles.
I'll allow that.
It's two windows.
It's a two interlocking window. Horseshoes that are both on an XYZ matrix.
Yes.
But the thing that I was getting at with the things moving to the left. Yes. Liberalism will always cast the battle as between liberals and conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
This has always been the case back to when it was actual conservatives versus classical liberals. When it was like people who wanted the king to remain in power.
Mm-hmm.
And now no conservative would consider monarchy in reality, right? If you're a conservative who likes monarchy, you're just not a liberal. It's just what it is. And so this is something the New Polity guys say all the time, is like conservatives are too willing to allow themselves to be the other side in the left-right paradigm. And so you're casting you're like, oh yeah, I'll take this script, and you didn't read till the end where you lose. Mm-hmm. Like if you play the game, you lose. And so the only way to not lose is to not play, and that's an option.
Yes.
And so I think
what I was trying to say about Trump is that he didn't really play. He didn't in 2016 specifically. Yeah. He didn't play the game in 2020.
He was a good politician in the true sense of the word, where he was just like doing what he believed was best.
Like he didn't,
which I don't think is always true. But most politicians don't do what they believe to be the best. They just do what will keep them in power.
Yes, this is also a Shane Gillis bit where he talks about just how great those early debates were with all the Republican candidates, because I think it's actually really insightful. Comedians are kind of like the philosophers of our day, I think.
You know what? Comedians, but no one's ever talked about this. Comedians are kind of like the modern day philosophers. They can sit there as a modern day court jester.
He says that like Trump would come up to the debate and he goes, "Hi, I'm Ted Cruz, and I believe in, you know, I want to stop illegal immigration. Hi, I'm Mike Pence, and I believe da da." And then Trump comes up and he goes, "Rand Paul is ugly." And so like, he's like, "Whoa, I didn't know you could say that." It's like, yeah, like you didn't, we didn't know that you could say that in a presidential debate until Trump started saying it. It's like, oh, yeah. he didn't play the game. Whether that's a good or bad thing, I don't know, but that's the reason he won.
And that's why when people try to ape Donald Trump, it doesn't work, because they're trying to play a game.
They're trying to play the game by imitating a guy that wasn't playing the game, which doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
And so for these kids that are at this parish, I think the problem for a lot of people that are in the Catholic space is that they're trying to play the game, as it were, which is just stacked against you, right? The old people have more money. They have more free time. They have more influence. They have more knowledge than you do. Like the people who care about restoring any type of tradition to a parish are just coming at a deficit from all angles. Mm-hmm. And so the problem is that people run into issues. And I saw a lot of this on Twitter today, is that people believe in tradition and then they put on this persona. They like adopt this role of like, I am the young guy who is traditional, which means that I pray the rosary in a certain way. It means that I go to confession in a certain way. It means that my opinions about the liturgy are stated in a certain way. And there's like a belief that like, in order to, you have to like shock people into believing what you believe because they're wrong. And they are wrong in some cases. Like, no, a woman can't preach the homily, right? Like, you are correct. It's like the dog. You are correct that a woman cannot preach the homily.
And the solution to those things are the same. I'm just kidding. That's it.
No. but the very act of you starting a whole argument and like creating a division within your parish means that you've lost before you've even started, because you're failing at just existing. Like, you need to just be there and be a good parishioner and not be the spearhead of some type of intergenerational conflict, because that doesn't, because you'll lose.
Because the reason why they're doing that is to test to see if you'll show up. And then when you do, they go, aha, see, we are fighting against something, and everyone loves an underdog. And so even though Susan has been at the parish for 68 years, and she's, you know, her husband is a retired oil baron, and she's has a ministry center named after her, and the pastor is just like, you know, she's got all the power in the world. Because you're opposing her, you now seem like the big, mean, big, bad wolf. And it's tricky. Those tricky hobbitses, they figure it out. But I think you're right. It's, you know, I think the politics analogy is great for this traditionalism thing, because the most illiberal thing in the world is Catholicism.
Is me.
Because it's the only real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Catholicism is more real. Phoebe was like asking me to ask my priest friends this question, and I was like, I don't want to ask them this question. This feels kind of personal. But she was like, ask them what it feels like to make God. And I was like, I don't know if I can ask that question. But I asked our parochial vicar. He's been a priest for less than a year now. He was just ordained. Mm-hmm. And I had a nightmare. He got reassigned. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But I asked him, and he was like, it's so weird. Like, when I blessed holy water for the first time as a deacon, and when I consecrated the hosts for the first time as a priest, my first thought was, that's it? I was expecting like fire and flames and smoke and something supernatural. But he's like, this is just so normal. It's so natural. Mm-hmm. It's more natural than anything. Yeah. Like, God's action in the world is more real than anything. Mm. And so this liberalism, modernity, it's fake. We're making up rules where it's like, I mean, this is why people don't like the transgenderism movement. It's like, you're making up words that aren't real. You're describing realities that you've made up. This is what liberalism is, right? It's like, oh, separation of church and state. That's never existed. It's a society, and there's a church, and there's a church in the society, and there's a governor in the society. And so how can you separate those two things? You're describing something that isn't real. And so
divide themselves.
Yes, exactly. The separation of the body and the soul. It's like, that's not real. They're together.
Real. It's just called death.
Yeah. Liberalism is kind of death, if you think about it.
Think about it.
And so I think that, you know, the way to beat liberalism and the way to restore tradition are the same, because they're the same thing. But it's seeing the game and saying, I refuse to play. I'm not playing. I used to do that. I used to do that to my friends when they would say, I lost the game. They lost the game. I'm like, oh, I stopped playing. They're like, oh, you can't stop playing. Like, yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. Oh, but that's one of the rules. Well, I'm not playing, so I don't need to follow the rules. I only need to follow the rules if I'm playing the game. And so that I'm not very fun at parties. But it's like, no, you're not. You know, so you could just not play.
I think all of this is why someone is way more likely to become more traditional or grow more in their faith in whatever expression. If someone is just organically growing in friendship with them and inviting them along, right? Like all of this is like boils down to this fact. It's like you would probably get more done if you tried to become friends with the boomers and invited them to things with you than opposing them because you want to be right. And so there's like a
good for Twitter, not for real life, you know?
Good for Twitter, not for real life. There's the last thing that I'll say, and I don't want to make this sound like a Trump fanboy cast, even though I am, but the difference between the governor and Trump is that the governor, it's forced. Like she had to bring it up. Like I kill dogs, yeah, which makes me this type of ranch woman. And that's why which makes me based. Trump, despite probably having a team or just himself, like understanding what to say and when to say it and how to say it, he does things in sort of an effortless way, which
he
is kind of the
have
last
a team,
point,
man. He just watches Fox News and tweets about
just,
it.
He just has charisma. Like he's just an extremely charismatic person. So the example that the article points out is the Ruth Bader Ginsburg clip. Despite being an all-time clip, you know, I didn't know that. You're telling me now for the first time. But what does he say after that? He says, you know, she was a great woman. She led an amazing life. What can you say? I'm actually really sad to hear that. You know, she really was an incredible woman. Thank you all for your time. And then he like walks off. It's like, that's the right thing to say in that moment. You know, like he did the right thing. That's the reason that whole thing became a meme. And he didn't rehearse that.
You know,
he didn't have a teleprompter. He just did it. And so that's the, again, extrapolating that back to the faith. It's like, if you're always trying to rehearse the arguments against the boomers and you're always trying to prepare and you can't just like, live in your own role so perfectly that you can just exist. Like he just was the president of the United States. He didn't need anyone to advise him. He didn't anybody to do anything. He just was, for better or for worse. You know, it worked sometimes and it didn't work other times. But he shook Kim Jong-un's hand, which I feel like accounts for something.
It's pretty crazy.
Right. And so I think if we just live in the role, like I'm just a guy who's just a dad at a parish who has some focused missionary experience and some podcasting experience. And I can provide that in as many ways as possible to my parish. And I can pray and I can love God. And that can be the way that I express these things. And if these things come up, I can invite people to see my point of view. And if they don't, I don't need to go to war over it. I think there's just too much. I don't need to prove to other people that I'm right, because the reason that other people are so successful is because they aren't constantly trying to prove that they're right.
You can be right or you can be rich. That's what I've been told.
This is Alex Hormozy's whole thing. It's like, why are you so worried about what other people think about you? Just do your own thing and you will instantly gain so much more productivity in your time. I think it's the same. Like, why do you care that the boomers are wrong about the Eucharist? If you just are the person that you are and you evangelize, eventually you'll be like, why does that guy bring so many more people to Mass than I do? Like, why is this parish growing and is our parish shrinking? Eventually they'll ask that. And either they'll apostatize or they'll realize the error of their ways.
And also, you don't need to beat them. They're so old.
They are old.
They're so old. Like, one of the priests in the article is like, they're just waiting for us to die. And it's like, I mean, I don't really think about you very much, but when I do take that into consideration.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need to beat the old boomers because they're going to...
Right.
It's not going to take very long, you know?
Yes.
And it's like...
I think we would all be able to create a better alternative culture if we just stop trying to force stuff. This was the worst part when I was a missionary, was whenever something started to feel like really forced, like a relationship or a strategy, we were like, ah, this isn't working. And the worst times was when you tried to keep going instead of just saying, stop.
This is not,
everybody hates this and we hate it. And like, why are we doing this?
So there's some things that you need to suffer through.
Yeah, there's some things you need to suffer through, but over when it comes to like relationships and people and faith and invitation, you don't want to pressure people. You don't want
to
make them.
You have to force it. It's probably crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got some good takeaways from this week's episode. QWERTY, why don't you tell us what we learned today? Is that Ubby Dubby or what?
No, that was me being QWERTY and you're Bob, and you have to read the Bible verse that I just put on the screen.
My loins.
Please do it in Larry the Tomato's voice.
Larry the Tomato.
Okay. I hope that did that make sense. I tried not.
Yes.
I'm only praising Trump in comparison to the governor. I'm not praising Trump in a vacuum. You know.
Yeah.
Like I don't think he's the best politician ever. I just think when you compare him to other right wing people, he does things differently, clearly. And I think there is something to learn from that. I think there are other people in the Catholic space that are effortless, that have charisma, that attract people to themselves. Curtis Martin is someone that I think of, where it's just like, dude built a whole thing. And he's not like, he's just a guy who really believes in the gospel.
He's just a guy in a red sweater.
He's just a guy in a red sweater, and he's elected.
Curtis, if you're listening to this, and I know you are, thank you.
Yeah.
Being a guy. Yeah, no, don't play the game.
I would like to try to not play the game, but you tell me that I'm too smart for my own good and that I'm always playing.
You're
the game.
Too smart for your own good.
You're always talking about how smart I am, which I think is a cool, which maybe we should end on that.
It's the kind of the theme. You know, the takeaway from this week's podcast is that Ethan is the smartest guy that I know.
But what did you mean when you said that earlier?
You just assume that other people understand the references. I do the same thing because I'm also very smart. Second smartest
guy. What references do I make that are...
I don't know. You just like assume context, you know, because you have so much context and you're like making connections and like you assume that other people are making connections too. Like the New York Times game connections. Might be familiar with it.
Yeah.
That's enough compliments. We're out of time.
I do have a brain that makes a lot of connections very quickly.
Yes.
And
so I'm good at podcasting.
Well, I think I'm good at podcasting because I have a great wife. You thought I was going to say co-host.
Hey, you didn't have her until years after we started the podcast. That's not fair.
But I always believed in her.
She existed as a concept in my mind before I met her.
I had the platonic form of the wife held before me.
Just
present.
A circle. Just
we were
a circle.
We were in the cave and she was the light. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's so beautiful, man.
Something like that. Anyway,
I'm breaking the song.
This has been the Crunch Catholic Podcast. We like to talk about stuff, man. We're glad that you've been here with us. The number one thing that you can do for us, if you like this show, is go to patreon.com/thecrunch.
And there you'll get a $10 a month. You'll get a bonus episode every month. $10 a month.
$10 a month,
you get four bonus episodes.
You get four bonus episodes a month and the previous 73 bonus episodes. That's a lot of extra content that you get just for $10 a month. And on top of it, you're helping us grow. I am trying to go. We have about 100 patrons right now. I am on a mission. I'm on a journey. I'm soft launching the journey here. We're trying to get to 200 patrons by the end of the year.
Wow.
And there will be a reward.
For you? Like, are you going to go get ice cream if you do it?
The reward is more money for us. No, but we should. I think we're going to figure something out. You'll be on the cutting edge. Starting from this moment to the end of the year, if you're a new patron, you will get something. We need to talk about it. It might be merch.
If you're an old patron, will you get something?
No, those people don't get anything. What are you talking about?
We got to give them something. I will say, when I sent those random mugs out when I was moving, people loved that.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. You will get something. So take that for what it's worth now. Sign up. $10 a month. Even $5. I'll even go so far as to say, if you sign up for $5 a month, you get something. If you're a new patron. For the old patrons, you will also get something that will be different than the new patrons, and we will figure that out in a private meeting.
I hate when we do this, but I love this.
I've been meaning to talk to you about it, and I'm doing it now so that we are held accountable by the people.
Okay.
So sign up, patreon.com/thecrunch. This is the year of the crunch. It's the year of Ethan. And we're
That's right. It's still the year of Ethan.
It's still the year of Ethan, and this is part of the year of Ethan, is in a big way, we got to double the Patreon.
In a big way. Bigly.
Bigly. I love this show, and I love you, and I love talking to you, man.
So good, man. I love talking to you, too. Well,
Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
Bring us to your parish if you want smells and bells. Ethan's the bells, I'm the smells.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We'll be praying for you. And we'll see you all next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.